Would anyone like to ask or share something?
Been wondering about one thing, given that the mind is very tricky and skilled at imitating advanced states, or let's say imitating peace. Also, given the fact that some mind states are extremely painful. Also, if I look at certain areas of my life, often it's very easy to avoid them without knowing it. So I'm sure this question has been asked many times before, but it just plays with me. It's that it's like a shadow that whatever I do, as far as so-called practice goes, can also be a masking, a dissociation, a pulling away from what's truly life. What's truly required to break through. So, which is in many ways, it's terrible. You know, it's the ultimate betrayal in many ways. But I just wanted to bring it up because it seems so lurking around the corner. It's like a shadow character.
Yeah.
I mean. You don't need to solve it, but it feels so appropriate for me right now to just put it out there. You know, there is this joker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think the way that also goes with what I had in mind to talk about today is partly a kind of shifting to take it as the big joker, to take it as even bigger. That it's a game rather than a treachery. Like its game is treachery, and so then make it a big game. That especially one part we can kind of notice is I want to know I'm doing well to keep myself going. Could you hear his thing? Yeah?
I heard it, but I didn't really understand.
Okay. Yes, he's the better English speaker of the room. how easily the mind mimics, do you know that word? Peace, for example. How easily we don't notice or pretend not to notice to ourselves that we're avoiding those places that are painful.
In meditation, while meditating?
Probably anytime.
Anytime.
Meditation as life. Life as meditation. So someone who's, if practice and life are companions or overlapping, so both. In the more meditation, formal meditation ways, and in the more daily living ways, the same kind of thing happening. And how that could waste a life with the best intention.
So we think we're working in ourselves, but
we forget to catch the mind pretending to be at peace and avoiding that seems unpeaceful. We forget to notice it's a filter again.
It's like a shadow. So perhaps you notice you go to the satsang, in theory you go to satsang meetings and it seems real good, but then you kind of think, no, something was off, something was not quite right. Especially if you talk to the people who are there. And either in yourself you can see, I've been doing this practice for a long time, but I'm really, really deeply avoiding. And I've, not only that, I've used my practice in order to avoid.
Right.
Yeah. And you can see it in yourself, but also in some of the teachers or disciples.
Yeah. Which partly can be okay to the step that shift of okay, a big game instead of a consistent treachery. So treachery is like betrayal. The Catalan is not coming. Traicionamen or something like that. How about Hebrew treachery, German treachery, Dutch treachery, betrayal.
Trahison.
I'm not
even to speak. No. Speak? Hardly English. And he's my English teacher. He's like the, oh yeah, thank goodness Ernst has come back so I can get that English back. Right. It happens to all of us. We keep getting humbled by this. All of us. Instead of like, they are so fake or whatever. And somehow the bittersweetness. So it is funny. Like it would make, I still, maybe someday, I'll take a real sabbatical and do the comic strip. Like, so funny. And so, as you're feeling right now, like, so sad, so tragic, or potentially tragic. But the more it's funny, the less it's so tragic. And the more it's tragic, the more it's funny. Like, we can... We can let it cut that deeply that it gets to the funny bone. So, like the way that it kind of can cut to notice is, wow, I'm repressing.
Mm.
And I thought it was peace.
Mm.
The way that can cut, like, when we notice that it's a rope on the skin, the way it can cut can trigger that whole problem, not enough, lack, pain, threat, alarm system, mind. And not go anywhere and we don't notice that treason, that betrayal. But if we stay alive maybe to the humor of it, the humor of it, the humbleness and the humor of it, the humbling humor. So the possibility then of accept, like of really not knowing all the time. This feels like peace. Maybe it's a joke. Maybe it's a betrayal. Maybe it's pretend. And I think that one thing that can happen there is then we really recognize and kind of appreciate the noble path till now. That was good intention. That was, instead of it being a full betrayal, it probably was, to some extent, some kind of peace, some kind of cooling down with some kind of cover-up. Mm-hmm. And now I can feel the cover-up part.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could, sometimes it's more like a feeling of a whole sweep. And then something gets uncovered naturally that I hadn't been able to feel before. And only because of that, now I can feel it. And then, again, that kind of like, oh, I don't know anything. And so coming back to the tenderness, the vulnerability. And you see the strength that has built in you, for example, to bear the tenderness and how still it's hard. How it's still nearly unbearable. To take the time to arrive in tenderness which other words for that would be like arise, that have come in the last few days with different individuals, like be loved, mm-hmm. to arrive at just be loved. For someone else, it might be just quietness. And so yesterday, it was kind of bringing this up a little bit with the hepatitis story and the earth seeming still actually flying faster than we can imagine in so many ways. And we're not flying off, we're flying on. We're stuck on, we can't get away from it even. These logics that we can't get. We can't get the, if it's going that fast, shouldn't we be flying off? And then we can remember that science still doesn't understand what gravity is. Mm. So we keep coming back to this zero. I have nothing to show for it. All that science, nothing to show for it. Mm. And we talk about dark matter, and it seems to be maybe possibly the most abundant thing in the world, in the universe, and we don't actually know what it is. Mm. We just call it dark matter. It's really funny. And I think there's the touch of being on that edge of discovery, mm-hmm. that is recognizable. We can feel, and it is a little bit, I said the other day, that we've lost so much our capacity for reverence. For example, for aliveness, mm-hmm. even beauty. Mm-hmm. And then we have such a misunderstanding, of beauty. Mm. It's not even beautiful. Yeah. And we know it, but we've forgotten. Mm-hmm. We've lost track of actual beauty. Mm-hmm. We've gotten so caught up in this fake thing. Mm-hmm. But I think we can feel that when we're in touch, whether it's painful or pleasant, there's something that goes, ah, yeah. So, in focusing, they talk about this very well, that if I go inside and feel, and I give enough time to feel, they have this great question, what's the worst of it? What's the worst of it? Whatever your thing is, if something's bothering you. So, for today, Aunt G, what's the worst of this shadow lurking betrayal? Or potential betrayal that's always there, what's the worst of it? Or with your this or your that, what's the worst of it? But then they say, give at least 30 seconds before you have any sense, and it'll be a vague sense. It's not gonna be, oh yeah, I got it, let's go. Mm. 30 seconds long is a long time to know I don't know, and to be kind of waiting. And that's the minimum. And then something vague comes into our felt sense, and there, if I'm in touch with it, there is a kind of ah, and then it's already changed. Again, 30 seconds. What is it? But this edge of discovery, where that doesn't care if it's pleasant or unpleasant. It's not into avoidance of unpleasant or pleasant, which is what our training is, actually avoidance of both, I think. Mm. I think it's incorrect to say that we're the usual thing, that we try to get the pleasure and get away from the painful. I think we're avoiding both. The programming that's installed, that we also adopted, avoids both. And something more natural avoids nothing. It just, as long as it can stay on this edge of aliveness, this edge of discovery. And we can start to get the feeling of what happens physically. We can feel it in the mind. I think. we, the scientists, discovered something. I think it's a huge discovery, and I think it was this year, this terrible last year, 2016. I know a few people who had a good 2016, like three. But they discovered the tail.
What?
The tail.
Tail.
Okay. Of a baby dinosaur. Did anyone see this? Preserved in amber. So not a fossil exactly. Well, I don't know, maybe it's still called a fossil. But because it was in amber, more is preserved. And there's these feathers. Feathers, pluma, on the tail of the baby dinosaur. And they're not just, like, it feels to me like this collective edge of starting to realize that quite a few dinosaurs had feathers. Quite a few. But mostly those ones in China there, so probably just that one little pocket of feathered dinosaurs. Let's see. Like, how much, I mean, just imagine our collective imagination of the reptile brain. That whole reptile part of us that the reptile brain, you know, like, what do they call it? Like the stem or our, you know, disdain for reptile, for reptilian. And gradually it's dawning on us the beauty. Because a lot of them had feathers but couldn't fly. They just had feathers. They just had these amazing feathers. And so this, and then now what they found, because it's an amber, they can see the type of feather. It's completely not about flying. It's the kind of feather that a peacock has. That's that iridescent thing, that metallic thing. Yeah? Is that okay? Just the English? And then, like, okay, just let that sink in. Including our human image of ourselves with our reptile brain, whatever percentage of DNA we share with reptiles. So this is also about our self-image as creatures, as humans. The basis upon which the mammalian and then the human evolved, grew from. Our stem. Our stem has feathers that are just about beauty. They had no purpose for flying or escape or fight or flight. Yes. Good. The T-Rex, so the more famous of all dinosaurs. Because the most scary in our mind. But okay, now Linda G is saying it didn't have a roar, but a roar would be like a lion. So it had a peep like a pigeon. Is that what you said? A purr, almost like a pigeon. Cool, a purr. And then those little like tiny hands that it has are just. Seem really different. It has three fingers, almost no arm. It's like this. That's us also. Our most fierce part can only purr. Pigeons have iridescent feathers too. Cool, thanks. Recently, when we talk about the reptile brain, what is mentioned is that fight, flight, fright reaction. That's all that we think of when we think of the reptile brain. And I hope there might be a discovery soon, a link between a whole great capacity that we have, that I think probably, I don't know, I've never done anybody's brain scan or anything, but I think it might be somewhere back there in our reptile brain that has such an incredible sensory capacity. We call it the unconscious. And what it receives, just in a simple level of sound and objects nearby, is so much more than we, as we think of ourselves, can do, can process. And I don't remember the number, but it's like image to help understand was there's a photo of a mountain. Let's see how it goes. And looking at the photo of the mountain for a split second, I'm not getting there. Some kind of proportion, like if in a photo of a mountain there's such and such number of pixels or whatever. Our who we think we are thinking brain can get like one pixel, and our who we think we're not, the T-Rex, the reptile brain, can get all of it. Let's just put it that way. In less than a second. We can get all of it with that wide open reptile brain or something in us. And we can get just a little tiny bit. We can process a few things per second up here, and we can process 1,000 or 1,000,000 back here. And so part of what I think happens by resting and by meditating and by meditating through resting is recovering, and we had this great description of Dora yesterday, recovering a lot of things, including that sensory and responsive capacity. So I mentioned some of the great work that happens around trauma healing and the decades of research that now start to become available in popular literature now. And one of the cool things that comes out in there that I'm surprised there's not more focus on this, but their focus is on healing the trauma. And my focus is on recovering what would prevent, would be responsive in a way that would not get traumatized. So there was a man, he was at home, he was going to work, he had an argument with his partner, and went out the door, got into the car. He had an impulse to turn back and say sorry before leaving. He's not going to die, don't worry. I mean, he will someday, but not in this story. Gets in the car, is driving to work, same street as always, gets to the stop sign, stops, and goes forward when it's his turn, and gets hit. And I think maybe, let's say, is kind of okay, but after some weeks starts to have some shoulder trouble, some neck trouble, something in his neck hurts. And then it gets worse and worse, and no one can help, and da-da-da, surgery, etc. And he goes to someone who does something called somatic experiencing, which basically is a field that describes what happens on deep rest retreat in terms of therapy. Feeling what's happening and letting things unfold, letting things find their place, letting things unwind. And what they discovered, the man and the therapist together, was that there had been an impulse just to turn to the left that had been stopped. Something had repressed the impulse to turn to the left. Twice. So first, the impulse to turn to the left and say, sorry, honey, you understand right, or whatever, didn't. So then already there's some things like, we're on the stuck momentum, we're on the stuck track. This would be with Ernst G, like his question, where something in us would just turn and say, what's happening here? Is this being real? Is this fake? What's getting covered up? What's revealing? It hurts, but is it really that bad? Oh, yeah, it hurts. You feel that, like the relief of just realizing, oh, it hurts. Or, oh, it's not actually painful, it's just intensity. Or, oh my God, it's too sweet, or whatever. Something that's too much for what we think we are, what we can process here. And then he would have turned to the left before going into the intersection. Even though he was following the rules, he stopped, he waited his turn, he went. There was technically, according to the rules, no reason to turn to the left, or whatever it was. But his body would have, his body-mind, his body-body-mind, wanted to, and that got repressed, and he got hit. So people start to even be able to recover. They don't know how they did sense that car coming up the wrong side or whatever and just about to hit them. Sometimes it happens, we don't know why we didn't step into the street, and then the bus comes. So many times we feel like, oh my God, I could have just walked into that bus. Or that bus could have just walked into me. So it's kind of like a superpower that we have in an egg waiting to hatch. Hatch. In an egg waiting to hatch. So I asked the questions a couple of times about protection. And what is protective? What are we protecting? What is worth protecting? Which I think are good questions. And I think that it's helpful to acknowledge that our life would protect life. And so a process of unwinding and unrepressing the protective impulse to turn to the left, to turn to that uncomfortable sensation. What's happening here? To turn back to that toilet that's broken again in some other way that I think I don't know how to do toilets. So it did happen again. Was that on this retreat or last retreat that I did? This one? Last one? This one? This one, okay. So the toilet seat came off. And so I just put it back on, like, just sitting on top. But then when the bucket gets filled with all those drops and it's time to flush with that bucket, it's kind of a pain. Like take the whole lid off, put it over there, it falls onto the, okay, and then. Okay, so I might as well like call the ashram people and see if Pawan Kumar can fix the the toilet seat. Since I don't really know about toilet seats, and Indian toilet seats, after about 2 days, they always break, so. And so it was interesting. It was only in the morning, that early morning, I was either tired or fresh enough to just be like, oh yeah, I gotta call them. And just after saying, oh yeah, I've gotta call them, so it's like I'm more in touch with the situation, and there's already like more of an okay. So it's okay, relief, and movement. The energy starts to move to action. And then I realize I could probably fix this. And I haven't even looked. I haven't even looked. And okay, I'm teaching a retreat. My child is here, etc. It's excusable. It's not a. It's not like. But I just look and I see. Yeah, it's broken. One of the pins that would go in to hold it on is not there anymore, and one is. And I just have to like get my face right into the toilet there to just put it on. That's all. That's fixed. That's as fixed as it's going to get. And it's fine. So the being in touch with as a like a letting go, being in touch with, and energy moves. So today, talking with one friend, there's the like lying down, lying down, lying down until something stands up. Lying down until something moves. Or even lying down as something moves. Not even first one, then the other. I came across this, one of my favorite, don't worry, I won't read the whole thing, but I will post this. From a cartoonist prophet named Michael Lunig from Melbourne. And it's from a book called The Curly Pajama Letters. That's just an imaginary correspondence in letters between Curly, Mr. Curly, and Vasco.
Pajama.
Vasco Pajama?
Yes.
Vasco Pajama. Dear Vasco, in response to your question, what is worth doing and what is worth having? I would like to say simply this. It is worth doing nothing and having a rest. In spite of all the difficulty it may cause you. No, sorry. In spite of all the difficulty it may cause, you must rest, Vasco. Otherwise, you will become restless, in big capital letters. I believe the world is sick with exhaustion and dying of restlessness. While it is true that periods of weariness, like so tired, help the spirit grow, the prolonged ongoing state of fatigue to which our world seems to be rapidly adapting is ultimately soul-destroying as well as earth-destroying. Tiredness is one of our strongest, most noble, and instructive feelings. It is an important aspect of our conscience, again, big letters and underlined, and must be heeded or else we will not survive. When you are tired, you must have that feeling, and you must act upon it sensibly. You must rest like the trees and animals do. So sometimes there's more of an awareness of the tiredness just saying to rest. And other times there's another kind of tiredness that still needs rest. In other words, be loved. In other words, allow protective energy to move. It's more an awareness of the need to move. So it could be the same things happening, lying down so something can move. Letting all that rest so something else can happen, can act. Does that make sense? It's like a one gesture. But sometimes we're so much more aware of having not allowed rest and allowing the rest. And we're not aware of how much that affects our situation and how much of a doing that is. And how much also creatively shifts. We can sometimes even feel almost like a rewiring in our brain. And sometimes there's more of the sense of the growing edge around who, me, like being moved. But as not as a restlessness. There's a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye that starts with this line. What should we believe in next? What should we believe in next? The title of the poem is The Rewilding. The Rewilding. Yeah? The Rewilding. It doesn't work so good in French. Remember that whole sauvage thing doesn't really. How did we do that? Yeah. Yeah. How would you do that in French? But it's not sauvage, remember? We do the description of the deep rest retreat in wildness,
yeah.
Last summer we didn't use sauvage. Naturel. Maybe. The rewilding, and the poem starts with this question, what should we believe in next? And it's just cool that there's that huge explosion that sometimes happens, yeah. Just then. Just getting a sense of, you know, Donald Trump is actually going to be sworn into the office in a few days. That's actually seems to be happening. a man who literally, when he was shown, you know, he had to be trained beforehand, so he's not just completely... he could know some of what he's in for before he starts, get some momentum going before it starts happening. So he's being trained about the nuclear capacity of the United States military. And his sort of question, I mean, he does sometimes ask good questions, the unexpected question. His question is, well, if we're paying so much for it, why don't we use it? He did, to the military advisors, which is good. You know, that's the good thing, is he doesn't realize how stupid he is. He's not covering up how dangerous that is. So the military people know that, and they're the ones who just heard him ask that question. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they're doing some stuff. So, et cetera, where we are, you know, there's always been stuff happening. This is happening now. What should we believe in next? Speaking of that deep humor, yesterday I almost started laughing out loud in a meditation. I was just lying here. And for some reason, the word Standing Rock came into my meditation. So in case you weren't into the news, there was this thing that happened. And it was taking a stand, and it was the Standing Rock people at Standing Rock taking a stand. Did you hear about the Native American people in the United States? So all these people, Native American, not only the one group who's trying to get the United States government to honor the treaty, the written agreement about their use of this land. But then, like, all the hippies and the priests and the thousands of people in wintertime, in so cold, one of the coldest places in the country. I won't go into the horrible details of the repetition of the history. The way people were treated by the police in their riot gear, as happens. And all of this almost like a play, a theater of our inside, our own inside. We know the feeling of putting on the riot gear because the Indians, because the wildness, because the savages. Now we can use Solash. The so-called savages are asking us to be honest. And also the part of us that's asking us to be honest and is unarmed, but is in this case, is standing there, and actually there's a coming together. And there's some media. And the request is not to build the oil pipeline. I mean, it is so ridiculous that it can be a deeply humorous thing. How ridiculous. It's an oil pipeline. And they want to bring it under the river. And even though that just happened with that river and that oil pipeline over there, it's safe. It's the best route. It's safe. But like, again, our own, like, this is us believing in so-called safety. We believe in the so-called safety, even though the evidence is otherwise. We believe in the need for development. We've got to get somewhere, right? We've got to have something to show for it. We've got to have the numbers. So she asks, what should we believe in next? The next line of the poem is also very U.S. reference, but I'll try to explain. Daniel Boone's brother's grave says, So Daniel Boone was a European-American guy who's known to be this, like, outdoorsy guy who can maybe light fire without matches kind of thing. Like. And his brother's grave, so where his brother is buried, says, "Killed by Indians." That's the next line of the poem. What should we believe in next? And then this glimpse of what were the beliefs at that time expressed in a gravestone. We point at it, poke at it like a wound. History's noose. A noose is a rope that we would be hung by. Below the grave, a cold spring runs, clear like a conscience. Now I'm alone. Only me and the white bones of an animal's hand revealed in the silt. So she's gone back. Here's this history with its way of describing its situation, its dangers, killed by Indians. And what is ignored, denied, unseen in that view? So the Indians' perspective. Protecting, doing the obvious thing. They're being invaded, they're protecting. And so part of what we uncover, staying on this edge of discovery, wherever it leads, pleasant, unpleasant, boring, long, too fast, too slow. Part of what we're into uncovering is also the aggression and also the victimhood. Killed by Indians. So poor Daniel Boone's brother. What that leaves out. She says, there remains the mystery of how the pupil, which is a word that means about the eye but also a student, devours, like eats T-Rexes, so much bastard beauty. Abandoned property. So here she is, there's what's happened. And there's the way we can get tied up in that. And there's the way we can let whatever's happened go towards freedom. We can feel something that's clear like a conscience. Clear like that part of us that's all about honesty, that we can trust. That part about us that's all about honesty that we can trust. That's feeling for that feeling of, ah, yeah, that hurts. Right. Oh, I'm just tired. Or, oh, I'm moving. That's an act of kindness that just happened. There remains the mystery of how the pupil devours so much bastard beauty. Bastard means we know who the mother is, we don't know who the father is. We don't know everything about it, but it's beautiful. And there's something that is just an empty space, mostly an empty space, that wants to learn, that devours so much bastard beauty. And it's a mystery. Abandoned property. And then she talks about a feeling of not wanting to be only the landscape, the bones buried. Let the subject be. So I love how the question was, what should we believe in next? And without saying, should we believe in something next? Now that we believed in that and all that happened from there, what should we believe in next? So much of a question that we can question even the act of believing and just say, let the subject be. Let the subject be. Don't believe. Just let the subject be the movement of the goldenrod, the mustard, the cardinal, the jay, the generosity. I don't want anything, not even to show it to you. The beak grass, bottle brush, dandelion seed head, parachute and crown. All the intention of wishes, forgiveness. This day's singular existence in time. The native field flourishing selfishly, only for itself. Selfishly only for itself, I feel is part of what we talked about yesterday of feeling the destructiveness of that watching myself thing and taking notes and letting it come back and making it a big game instead of a big betrayal, a bigger game, a bigger joke, a deeper funny bone. This day's singular existence in time. It's so big and so impossible to betray because it's just singular. There's not a chance for the shadow to do anything. The native field, including more, and all in our humbleness, flourishing selfishly, only for itself. That line of discovery, the flourishing only for itself. The dinosaur's tail, it's just beautiful. Not in order to fly or not in order to. Not for any human reason. Feeling how that human reason that we got behind was so destructive. And we still felt like the victim in it all. From the savages, from the Indians. Getting on the side of life and letting that then include itself in everything. Then there's in the two sides, in the three sides, in the four sides. When we rub up against anger, when we rub up against getting paralyzed, we rub up against feeling small or afraid or anguished. Maybe we can feel how it might have been an original movement that would have been protective. It wanted protection or it wanted to protect, and something stopped it. So of course there's anger. Of course there's fear. Of course there's something that's seeking protection and being protective through trying to get order and control or trying to just get away or trying to get on top of it or whatever, hold it together. Of course there are the movements to try to hold it together, the movements to try to get away, the movements to try to get on top, the movements to try to... And those movements don't feel like, resting and being moved. And we can simply feel that in the body. The wholeness, the bigness, the humbleness, simplicity. So part of recovering in the wildness, rewilding, is letting those stuck protective movements unstick themselves. So a little bit more room for anger, for heat, a little bit more room for the controlling. Not that it takes you, but that there's just room for it. Of course you want to control. Of course you do. Little one. That's the little one. and the big one has room for all the little ones. And I think that what mostly helps, like if 90% of our practice, 90%, could be around rest or being loved, which in a way is same. Like by resting is an agreement that we could be here, that we could feel safe, without being bound, without any contract. Like, I'll be good if you protect me. But just... And when we can't rest, there's something that thinks we can't. We can't let that give up, that thing that gave up. But it's a singular existence, and it's a native field flourishing selfishly only for itself, but it's the two at once. That much resting, that much earth, that much of roots and sprouting up. It's not two things. And the sprouting up is like laughing in the face of Trump. And it's so awesome as well, the name Trump. So what was it in Trump? What is it? Trump. Triumph and...
Oh.
And is it also in like the English, Trump? To Trump? Like in a card game? I'll trump you, like so tricky, winning in a tricky way maybe, or surprising? Or
but also in English, Trump is like to fart. Maybe just in my part of England.
We like your part. Also, you're part of England? Good. The part that wants to win at all costs. This is something that Jacques Lucéron talked about as a boy discovering how to play, though he was blind. And he said when he was playing with his friends, which is still kind of like, what? He was playing with his friends? He really, really zero sight from his eyes, playing with his friends. And when he found in himself that feeling of wanting to win at all costs, wanting to trump, naturally, like the superficial nature, like the programming, wanting to win at all costs, he lost track of that feathered dinosaur, huge sensory capacity. He tripped, he stumbled, he lost his flow. At the same, that's also like a single thing. The same, like when I want to have something to show for it, I've distracted myself from my chance, my chance to be a superpower. May all beings be peaceful. In the singular existence, in the native field, aware of each other's beauty, lying down and rising up. selfishly for itself. One movement for awakening for all.